From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Duncan in for Beth Ruyak. A little more than 1 week has passed since the June primary election, and California politicians are still riding the waves of the fallout while finalizing the state budget. For today's Capital Chat, we're checking in with Ben Bradford, state government reporter and host of Cap Radio's Keys to the House podcast. Ben, welcome back to Insight.
Thanks for having me.
So on your latest episode of Keys to the House, you had some political strategists interpret the results of last week's primary election for a preview of the November general. What are some of the key issues both parties are watching?
Yeah, well, you know, the big concern for Democrats was that there are all of these potentially competitive congressional races in what's long-held Republican territory. But because of California's unusual top two primary system, where it doesn't matter what party you are, however many votes you get, the top two vote-getters, regardless of party, advance the general election. And Democrats were concerned that in a few of these races, they could get locked out where they would have two Republicans advance the general election. Not because Republicans would necessarily get enough votes that, you know, they would just but because the Democratic vote would get split among multiple candidates. So that didn't happen. In a couple of districts, it was very, very close, but it looks increasingly clear. We still have some ballots coming in that there will be a Democrat versus a Republican in all of these really key races. There was one race where Republicans could have potentially gotten locked out. And so, you know, I think parties are still kind of reckoning with how do they campaign in a top two system. I mean, you even saw this in the governor's race where the sort of strategy for Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa was to kind of get into the top two, realizing that he probably wasn't going to get ahead of Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. So instead vying for that second spot. And that spectacularly did not work out with Republican candidate John Cox really securing that. So that was one thing we were looking at. The other thing is just turnout. Because, you know, the Democrats have been hoping that enthusiasm in California against President Trump would drive voters to the polls. There are about 6 million ballots counted so far with about a little over another million left. Turnout's likely going to be around 38%. Which, you know, it's a midterm primary. They tend to have lower turnout, but it's probably not what Democrats were hoping for. It's probably better news for Republicans. I mean, just that there's not a huge sign of major turnout. So those are a couple of things we were looking at.
Is there an issue that is uniting the GOP this cycle in California?
So the big thing that Republicans are hoping is going to drive enthusiasm for their side and drive turnout is the gas tax, and especially repealing this this gas tax increase 12 cents a gallon that went into effect in November that was part of this transportation funding bill major package that Governor Jerry Brown kind of cobbled together with lawmakers last year. And Republicans successfully recalled State Senator Josh Newman. It breaks the what would otherwise likely be a supermajority for Democrats in the legislature. They recalled Josh Newman, who had won a longtime Republican seat back in 2016. And the message of that recall, the reason for the recall, was the gas tax.
So we have a piece of tape from one Democratic strategist at this point. This is Katie Merrill, and here's what she had to say about the opposition to that gas tax.
So I always say California is a little more purple than people realize, particularly when it comes to ballot measures. So the gas tax, and particularly on tax measures, we are very purple. So this gas tax measure, and especially based on the results in the Orange County recall, is going to increase Republican turnout. And that could be problematic for us in taking back these seats.
Were Democrats expecting that kind of backlash to be this severe?
I mean, I think that, you know, if you talk to Katie, for instance, you just heard, you know, she was disappointed by that. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, Josh Newman, about almost 60% of voters voted to recall him. That's a pretty big number in a district that was very, very close. He narrowly won back in 2016. So, you know, it's something that that both parties are really closely watching. It's going to be a huge deal. Look for this to be sort of the main message from Republicans. There's a ballot measure that that John Cox, the Republican candidate for governor, has funded that is essentially to repeal that gas tax. That's going to be on the ballot in November. So all of these, you know, kind of issues in general, this is going to be the one to watch.
So you brought up Senator Josh Newman, and he was recalled, as you said, last week. Was this unique to this district, or could it spell out a bigger trend in the state? First, let's listen to a little bit of tape. We have political analyst Paul Mitchell on the recall. Let's check that out.
He won the general election in what most people considered a pretty shocking upset of Lingling Chang. And it was carried through because of the, you know, Orange County turning Democratic for the first time, this big wave election we had in the 16 presidential with huge Democratic and young voter turnout. And that swept him into office. Now, once he gets to Sacramento, he is target number one.
So let me just kind of unpack that a little bit. Basically, Mitchell is saying that he is skeptical that the gas that you can say from the recall of Josh Newman, that the gas tax is the reason that Newman was so kind of overwhelmingly recalled. Because essentially he's saying, look, Newman won very closely in 2016, which was a November general election in a presidential year. And if you look at just the sort of general cycles of the way that turnout works, and so much of elections is based on these kind of like fundamental dynamics of who's going to show up to the polls, given the kind of race that it is. You know, Democrats tend to turn out much more in presidential years and particularly in general elections. In midterm years, Republicans tend to have kind of a steadier presence. So while the Democratic vote kind of swings up and down, the Republican vote holds pretty steady. And so Mitchell is saying, look, the gas tax was the sort of the reason, the justification for doing the recall. But he's saying the actual election and what we saw from it and the turnout has, to him, more to do with just the fundamental dynamics. It was a primary election in a midterm year. Republicans tend to turn out more for those. So I don't know that he's saying necessarily that the gas tax won't be a big issue. We know it will be. And certainly it'll be just even if it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy, mm-hmm. because, you know, people are looking at the recall and saying, wow, that worked. So now that's going to be a major focus, or because it does work. But either way, he's saying that it's the in this instance, you can't necessarily draw that conclusion. It's more of a correlation rather than causation.
I'm talking with Cap Radio state government reporter Ben Bradford for this week's Capital Chat. So one story that we were tracking last week was the possibility of one party being shut out in key races. And you've touched on that a little bit under this top two primary system. But that didn't happen. So why not? And were we overestimating that quirky aspect of the top two system?
Yeah, I think that it depends. So if you know, Paul Mitchell, who we just heard from,
right.
Who's this data analyst, you know, he's one of the two major companies that provides voting data to both parties and to campaigns from both parties. He would tell you it's unlikely. If you listen to our show and you listen to our episode titled "The Dem on Dem Factor," we go pretty well into it. And he says, look, you know, there's sort of a whole bunch of things that have to happen, but when you sort of replicate that over multiple races, then it becomes more likely. Now, to me, it looks like if you look at some of these races, for instance, the Orange County race where Dana Rohrabacher is a Republican congressman who's the incumbent. And Rohrabacher is not all that popular. He only got about 30% of the vote, despite being in Congress since the 1980s. There was another, you know, very well-known or relatively well-known Republican running in that race named Scott Baugh. Among Democrats, there were multiple Democrats running that race, many of whom were well-funded and who have much less name recognition. So you think about that and you have this possibility of the vote splitting between on the Republican side, just Rohrabacher and Baugh, and on the Democratic side splitting between multiple candidates. And when you carve it up that way, there was a real possibility of a lockout. It didn't end up happening. I haven't looked at the numbers, the latest numbers, but it was very, very close. We're talking, you know, within 1,000 votes for quite a long time. It's probably just outside of that now. All you would need is a slight adjustment for that to have been a lockout. So that's really, you know, for Democrats, kind of like by the skin of their teeth. And they spent hundreds of thousands, probably millions of dollars attacking Scott Baugh, bumping up their candidates. At one point, the DCCC, which is the campaign arm for Congress, even spent money to support a Republican candidate who was further down the ballot, a lesser known one who they knew did not have a chance to win, just because they wanted to pull Republican votes from Baugh. So, you know, that's sort of the factors that made it so there was not a lockout.
So how are the national political figures factoring into all these scenarios, including, of course, President Trump and other high profile Dems?
Well, for Democrats, you know, if the gas tax is going to be the key Republican issue that they're going to look to focus on, President Trump is going to be the key issue for Democrats, right? And essentially making the argument that in the congressional races that we're following, that, you know, Republican members of Congress are kind of in lockstep with Trump, who is very unpopular in California. And so he's going to have an oversized presence. I mean, you saw, I think, Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom on Twitter saying, yeah, Trump, please come campaign in California. And, you know, on the other side, you're just going to see a lot of money from national groups because, you know, sort of the whole premise of our podcast and the reason there's so much concentration on California is because, you know, if Democrats are 23 seats shy of having a majority control of Congress. So Republicans are trying to hold on to those 23 seats. In California, there are 7 districts where Hillary Clinton won that Donald Trump lost in 2016. And so if you think about that, that means that if that suggests, and maybe it does and maybe it doesn't, that those seats are kind of vulnerable or up for grabs, there's the examples of Democrats winning those districts at least in some way, well, that's a third of the ones that are going to be the battlegrounds to determine which party controls the House. And that's a huge deal because, you know, it's right now we have United Republican control. And if Democrats won the House, not only would you see that, but, you know, if you remember sort of when President Obama was in office and Republicans won control of the House, you had Daryl Issa, who's one of the most embattled. He's retired, but his district is one of the biggest battlegrounds now. But you remember all the investigations, whether it was into Benghazi or Fast and Furious or the IRS potentially targeting Republican groups. All of those kinds of things were investigations that came from Republicans having a majority in the House.
So let's switch gears a little bit here and talk about the state budget process. Where are we in that?
So we're expecting a vote later today on the state budget. And, you know, I think sometimes people's eyes roll back in their head when they hear, oh, the budget. But, you know, the reason this matters is because this is the biggest bill that the legislature will pass in a year, and you're looking at it just by the amount of money. This is a $200 billion budget that decides what is the state going to spend, you know, your money on. So, yeah, we're expecting that vote later today. And, you know, then Brown has to sign it by, you know, the constitutional mandate to pass it is tomorrow, and then Brown has to sign it. So that's where we're at.
And so before we let you go, are there any updates to the fallout to the sexual harassment stories we've been tracking for the past few months?
Yeah. Well, so the most recent thing is that Christina Garcia, the assemblywoman who a Democratic assemblywoman who was one of the people in Time magazine with the woman of the year being the silence breakers. And there were actually sexual harassment allegations against her. There was an investigation. The allegations of sexual harassment weren't substantiated. There were other ones about her being abusive to staff and using, you know, vulgar language with them and so forth that were substantiated. The person who made some of the sexual harassment allegations, that his lawyer appealed, and the assembly has now reopened that one. So that's going to be something that we're watching as well.
So this is an ongoing case, and that's not done.
Not done yet, apparently.
Okay. Well, Ben Bradford, thank you for coming in, being on Insight today. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Have a great day.
You too.
We have more on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.